There's a story that I've told two or three times from the pulpit here at Covenant. And if I think that I've told a story two or three times, it probably means that I've shared it five or six times. So many of you have probably heard this story before, and some of you might be fortunate enough to hear it for the first time. But one of my favorite preachers was the late Fred Craddock, and he taught preaching for many years at Candler Seminary at Emory in Atlanta. And he told this story about his childhood. And here I'm going to quote him in his own words, and so the first person is him, it's Fred. So this is what Fred wrote in his own words. When I was a boy, once I was taken out of the house into the backyard and was allowed to lie on the grass and chew the tender stems of grass. You know how you do on a summer evening, just lie there, chew the tender grass and look up at the sky. And my father said to me, "Son, how far can you think?" I said, "What?" He said, "How far can you think?" "Well, I don't know what you mean." The father said, "Just think as far as you can think up toward the stars." So I screwed my imagination down and I said, I'm thinking. He said, "Think as far as you can think." "I am thinking as far as I can think." And his father said, "Well, drive down a stake out there now. In your mind, drive down a stake. Have you driven down that stake? That's how far you can think." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Now what's on the other side of your stake?" I said, "Well, there's more sky." He said, "Move your stake." And we spent the evening moving my stake out there. And it was a crazy thing to do, but I will never thank him enough for doing it. And here ends my quote from Fred Craddock. And there are times in the life of faith when we're called to move our stake. And that's what happened to Abraham in our reading. And here in chapter 15, he's still called Abram. In the Hebrew, Abram is father of nations, and then Abraham is father of many nations. And so later God will change his name, but not yet. But when we first encountered Abram in chapter 12, a voice came out of nowhere and tells Abram, who in the text is 75 years old, to leave behind the only home he has ever known and to journey forward to a land that God will show him. And God promises to make him a great nation, and all the families of the earth will be blessed through him. And so Abraham and his wife Sarah do exactly what they're told. They pack up and leave their old lives behind. And as we read the story in Genesis 12, 13, and 14, we learn of their adventures in and out of Egypt. And we also watch how Abraham and Sarah grow even older and continue to remain childless, even though God has promised to make of them a great nation. And even apart from God's outlandish promise, there's a question of legacy. Without a chosen heir, how can there be any legacy at all? And for people of Abraham's time, no matter how much prosperity or land you might store up, unless you have offspring who will continue to work the land and care for you as you age, your legacy and prosperity become as fleeting as the crops that wither in a season. And when Abraham cries out to God, "Oh Lord God, what will you give me? You have given me no offspring." Abram is in pain. He's questioning his faith, questioning God's promise to him, maybe even doubting God's care for him. It's a moment of despair. And then God listens and tells Abraham to look up at the night sky and to move his stake. Specifically, God says, "Look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you are able to count them, and so shall your descendants be." Some of you may remember that we had this story last year, and last year's sermon included that story. But from here on out, this year's sermon is different from last year's sermon. In last year's sermon, I focused on this idea of God making a promise and what happens when there's a threat to the promise. And that's still a motif in all of this. But this morning's sermon focuses on how can we begin again with an expanded vision. Let's say we lie on the grass all night long looking at the stars and we move our stakes until there are no stars on the other side of those stakes. And then what? How do we begin again? What do we do from there? And the late Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who was once the chief rabbi of the United Hebrew Congregation for the British Commonwealth, he was also a prolific writer and biblical commentator. And he writes about the faith of Abraham and Sarah, and he says that this, that faith is the ability to live with delay without losing trust in the promise, to experience disappointment without losing hope, to know that the road between the real and the ideal is long, and yet to be willing to undertake that journey. That's what he means by faith, that faith is faith for the long haul. And Sacks concludes his essay by writing, "To wait without despair, to hope and keep on hoping, that is the faith of Abraham and Sarah's children, the faith that they themselves lived. And though it was shot through with disappointments, and though they themselves sometimes gave expression to their doubts and fears, it did not prove in vain. The Jewish people kept faith alive, and faith kept the Jewish people alive." And it occurs to me that Abraham and Sarah's story could have concluded so differently. It could have ended tragically with bitterness, with Abraham and Sarah raging against God. But instead, God fulfilled the promise beyond their expectations. Now, I have another favorite sermon illustration that most of you have probably heard. But the late novelist E.L. Doctorow once said something about writing a novel that I believe is also true of the life of faith. He said that writing a novel is like driving a car at night. You can only see as far in front of you as the headlights will shine. But you can make the whole trip that way. And so this morning, I want to hold before us these two images, looking at the stars, an expanded vision, but also only having enough light to see the next few turns in the road ahead, and yet still having faith that we can make the whole trip that way. And what does that mean for us? What does it mean for you in your own life where you are now? How does an expanded notion of God's grace and love and power help you imagine what the next step might be? And I love these two images. Our own David Burke was very active with the Vera C. Rubin Observatory in Chile. And I was mesmerized by the first photos that came from that observatory. And if I understand correctly, part of the project is that it will map the southern sky over the next 10 years in a huge time lapse and be of immense interest to astronomers and astrophysicists as they study the sky. But to be able to look to almost to the very beginning of the universe, it's incredible. It is such a stake-moving experience. And I recently resonated with E.L. Doctorow's image of driving a car at night. This summer, our family vacationed at June Lake, and the GPS took us through Yosemite Park at nighttime. And so I could only see as far as the headlights would shine. And I kept seeing all these signs about how speed kills bears. And apparently each sign is erected where a bear was actually killed. So we drove ever so slowly. not knowing if the GPS was leading us astray or not. But we made it. We made it to June Lake, one little curve at a time, only being able to see so far in front of us. And when people write about the future of the church, people often mention how they can remember how when the sanctuaries were full, when the education wing was full of children in Sunday school with several in every single grade, and they wonder, what do we do now? Those times are gone. So what does the church do now? And I believe that we begin where we are. We get in our metaphorical car. We go where we see the headlights shining, and we try something new. Our homecoming Sunday was an idea for expanding our hospitality. And maybe we can take advantage of our close proximity to Mitchell Park. Maybe I could set up a table and do some sermon writing and other things there, but more importantly, interact with people. And we can find creative ways of interacting with the community around us. And our blessing of the animals service in October, when we're invited to bring our pets in for a blessing, could be one way where we can connect with the community around us. That people who might not otherwise want to enter a church building or any house of faith might be willing and open to see what a blessing of their household pet might look like. And I invite us simply to keep thinking in our own minds, those of you who have been a part of Covenant for years and who love this congregation, what do you imagine seeing with the headlights for the next few steps ahead? What new thing would you like to see us try? Do you have a passion that you want to share with the church and get more people in our congregation involved in? I think all things can be possible. And I'd like to end the sermon with a few moments of reflection. That with whatever is happening in your life right now, with whatever hopes that you have for our congregation, what does it look like for you to lie down in the grass, to move your stake, to imagine God helping with what it is that you're hoping to happen? And what do you see with the headlights for the next few steps ahead? I invite us to a minute of silence, and then we'll have our next hymn.